Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh, Benson Victor Bring. Major League Baseball and all related things. Inside MLB. Inside MLB.
We on? Oh, yeah. Okay, so good evening, Inside MLB fans. My name is Benson Sector. Sorry for the little bit of a stall there. The live button on the show is malfunctioning. But anyway, we got a show to do, right? And it is Wednesday. We got a lot of baseball going on Monday night. Tuesday, all Tuesday, since we don't do Tuesdays anymore. And earlier in the day today. So right after we got off, something big went down. And that was, for the Orioles, Pedro Alvarez agreeing on a one-year deal. And this one-year deal, it's a $5.75 million deal. It's with the Orioles. This happened Monday. It includes $1.5 million in playing incentives. Alvarez figures to be Baltimore's designated hitter, while also spending time at first when Chris Davis is given a game off. This dynamic likely will limit Mark Trumbo's usage in 2016, as Alvarez will be the clear favorite to be a daily starter when the Orioles obviously don't have Chris Davidson and just stuff like that. Again, he spent his first 6 seasons in Pittsburgh. There's a great player there, and really, following a disappointing 2014, Alvarez found his power stroke last year. He clubbed 27 home runs with 77 RBIs and a 787 OPS in only 491 plate appearances. In the field, the move from third base to first base did little to endear him to the defensive-minded Pirates, and Alvarez ended up completing only 119 games started because of that lackluster defense. He signed a one-year deal with the Orioles after being non-tendered by the Pirates and figures to be Baltimore's DH against Rays. His power plays in any park, but he could push for 30 homers in that loaded lineup, making it a exciting player to watch for the Orioles this year. And I'm just excited to see what we're going to get out of Pedro Alvarez. I mean, I think he's going to have below average at-bats. I think he's going to have a poor average, but those home runs, they are going to be great. Sky high, if you know what I mean. His RBIs, I think they're going to be good. I don't think he's going to score many runs. They're not going to be poor, but it's going to be weak. You know, they're going to be average. So that's just his overall. That's my overall feel on Pedro Alvarez for this year. So let's move to the Red Sox news and how Eduardo Rodriguez is his swelling's been minimized, but he's not ready to throw off the mound. And again, he has a dislocated kneecap. ESPN Scott Lauber said the swelling has minimized. Again, he's not clear to throw off the mound. I mean, it sounds like he's progressing well, but I think fans will want to continue to follow the situation to make sure he can return to the mound in time to get enough work and be ready for the start of the season. I think a healthy Rodriguez is eligible for a breakout season, as he has the stuff in physical characteristics to make it as a number three starter. And Boston's plan to go with a starting rotation that didn't feature a true ace, and those problems showed up early. Starters, to be honest, they got hit hard. They weren't going deep into games, and relievers were getting taxed. The organization reached into its minor leagues, where they had three prospect left-handers pitching at AAA Pawtucket, including Rodriguez. He got a spot start late May when Boston went to a temporary six-man rotation, and he pitched so well that he stayed in the rotation for the rest of the season. Rodriguez is poised on the mound and used an above-average three-pitch mix and allowed just one run in his first three starts. In his fourth start, Rodriguez had problems tipping his pitches, something that recurred a few more times during the season. But overall, it was a good first season. He finished up allowing just one run in five of his last seven starts. Rodriguez is really expected to open the season in the rotation. And so, as a starting pitcher, I don't think he's going to pitch that many innings. 150 innings, that's low for a starting pitcher. I think his ERA is going to be average around 3.75, 3.7. His WHIP, again, right around that average mark, 1.2, 1.3, is what you can expect out of Eduardo Rodriguez. That's weak. But we'll see what we get out of Eduardo Rodriguez this year. Moving to our next team in the A-League, and we're actually going to spend 4 minutes on this guy. His name is Marco, and he has a back injury right now, but he successfully threw on Wednesday and is scheduled to throw live batting practice this weekend and make his first sprint appearance. Even though he has this back injury, he should be able to break camp with the Blue Jays. And I think Estrada, it appears he's recovering very well, and he should be ready to slot into the Blue Jays rotation soon, as long as everything goes planned. And Estrada, he was a home run machine, moving from one already hard ballpark to an even harder one in the toughest ballpark division of the more difficult league. How could this work? Well, a 216 BABIP and 79% strand rate helps. Just because those marks are primed for regression doesn't mean he didn't influence them. His career track record simply doesn't suggest that the same confluence of events will come together the same way in 2016. He succeeds with a rising fastball and plus changeup combo that induces loads of weak in-air contact, which drives his 261 career BABIP. The declining strikeout rate is a bummer for fans, but it's never been his key to success. Since the start of 2012, his WHIP is 13th best among 169 qualified starters, so he will supply value there. When factoring in an ERA rise, look more to his 2012-13 for guidance as opposed to 2014. So for Marco Estrada in 2016, I think he's going to pitch about 190 innings. This is above average for pitchers. I believe he's going to have about a 3.6 ERA. Pretty good for starting pitchers. A 1.1 WHIP, that's great. I think he's going to be do a great job. Not allowing a lot of walks. He commands the strike so well, and he doesn't allow a lot of hits. So that's good for him on that side. But on the strikeout side of things, I think he's only going to get about 130, which is weak as you know anything about strikeouts. I think he's going to get about 10 wins. Again, that's pretty weak for starting pitchers. And obviously, I don't think he's going to get any saves. And if you're factoring in the average saves for pitchers, he's about average in that one. So when you factor it all together, you see above average, good, great, weak, weak, and average. So it depends what you look at with Marco Estrada. You see the innings should be pretty good. ERA WHIP, pretty good. Strikeout wins, bad. But what I think, you factor in the innings, the ERA and the WHIP, it's going to be a lot of quality starts. He doesn't necessarily need to get the strikeouts because of that great WHIP, and the wins, they will eventually come. So I expect a good season out of Marco Estrada for the Blue Jays this year, who are in some need of pitching. And one of my favorite stats, ERA, WHIP, and FIP. His ERA last year was great, 3.13. But listen to this. His WHIP of 1.04. Now, that's elite. Amazing. I don't think he's going to repeat that this year, though. I'm projecting around a 1.1 WHIP, which is still great, but it's not at the elite level. Marco Estrada, he doesn't allow a lot of walks. He knows how to throw strikes, simply put, and he doesn't allow a lot of hits. So the fact that he doesn't strike out a lot of batters, it's not going to hurt him the way it might hurt other people, because if they allow a lot of hits in the WHIP, you know, it's around 1.5 or even in the 2s, they're going to need to strike out a lot of people. But Marco Estrada is different. He doesn't necessarily need to strike out as many people as some other pitchers might have to. So that's interesting with Marco Estrada. All right, we have to take a break on Inside MLB, but when we come back, we are going to be moving to the National League East, talk about the Phillies, Marlins, and Mets. We've been talking about the American League East, Pedro Alvarez and his one-year deal with the Orioles, Eduardo Rodriguez getting back in shape, swelling is minimized, and just talking about Marco Estrada giving an outlook for him for the 2016 season as he's recovering from his back injury. So let's move over to the National League East. Talk about the American League East. It's time to go to the National League side of things. With the Phillies, and we're going to start off with some sort of sad news and how Aaron Alter, with a wrist injury, he's out 4 to 6 months with this, and he will require surgery. And again, he's been ruled out for 4 to 6 months. Now, really, this is a pretty brutal development for Philadelphia, as Alter was one of the young bright spots expected to make the 25-man roster and start somewhat regularly. Odubel Herrera was already expected, you know, to play every day. And now some combination of Peter Borges, Tyler Goodell, Cody Ash, and Darnell Sweeney will need to occupy the remaining two outfield spots until some of the Phillies' prospects like Nick Williams and Roman Quinn are ready to join the mix. Of the options expected to make the 25-man roster out of camp, Goodell is the most appealing player to me. As a toolsy 23-year-old with a strong approach, it sounds like Alter will be out until mid-July the earliest, so he can be avoided in most situations. So last year, Alter opened the season at AA before moving up to AAA in July. He hit well at both levels, and when the Phillies needed an outfielder in August, they decided to give him a look. He made the most of his early opportunities by displaying his power stroke and earned a significant share of the playing time in the Phillies' outfield rotation over the rest of the season. He has the potential to be a 2020 player. Even if he can turn a few more of his doubles into home runs, that would be huge. It would be great. But that may come with a relatively poor batting average. His 25.5 strikeout percent rate from last season should trend downward as he adjusts to big league pitching. But this is not a player who will be able to translate his high averages from the upper levels to the majors. Unfortunately, a wrist injury will sideline him for 4 to 6 months. So, if you're a fan, you can sort of just push him out of your mind until he comes back. Look for a return, though, if you're a fan, in August or September. And he's going to try to lay the groundwork for a strong 2017 season. Let's move. I forgot to turn on the buzzer. So let's move to our next guy, David Hernandez of the Philadelphia Phillies, and how he is dealing with an elbow issue right now, and more specifically, in the elbow. It's a triceps. But he is expected to throw a side session. He actually did throw a side session today, so that's somewhat good news for him. And again, he's not pitched in a game since March 1st due to soreness in his right triceps. The Phillies are saying the injury is not serious. If Hernandez is healthy, he'll likely open the year as the Phillies' closer. If he is not, it creates an opportunity for Luis Garcia, Ernesto Friere, Edward Mujica, and Andrew Bailey. And after missing the 2014 season following Tommy John surgery in spring training, Hernandez returned to the Diamondbacks bullpen in June. The 30-year-old right-hander recorded 7 holds, and in his last 3 seasons before surgery, Hernandez averaged 21 holds per season. As the 2015 season unfolded, Hernandez showed significant improvement, posting a 25.5% strikeout rate and posting 6.6% walk rate in the second half. He also showed similar velocity on his fastball, averaging 94.3 miles per hour on the pitch, just half a mile per hour less than his 2013 average. The Phillies pounced quickly when Hernandez became a free agent during the offseason, inking him to a one-year deal. He may have a clear path to close games in Philadelphia following the team's decision to ship Ken Giles to Houston over the winter. And Hernandez flashed the skills of an elite reliever before going under the knife. So let's just talk about David Hernandez for a bit and what we can expect out of him in 2016. So I think he's going to pitch about 59 innings, 60 innings, right? And that's pretty low for a relief pitcher. I think his ERA is going to be relatively high, like 3.85 is what I'm expecting out of him, which I don't know the ERA. So David Hernandez might not have the best season for the Philadelphia Phillies, but we'll see how he does dealing with this triceps issue right now. So let's move to another team in the National League East, and it's Carter Capp. And if you have been paying attention to the show, you probably know what's been going on with Mr. Carter Capp and how he will be undergoing Tommy John surgery due to an elbow injury. And last year, Capp missed the final two seasons of He missed the final 2 months of last season due to an elbow injury. But there was no report of any trouble this spring until he needed an MR last week, with Dr. James Andrews recently confirming that Capp suffered a torn UCL. The 25-year-old righty will miss the entire 2016 season and may not be ready for the start of the 2017 season. AJ Ramos now stands all but assured of opening the season as Miami's closer. So, after a rough 2014 campaign and a horrid spring training, Capps was forced to begin the season with AAA New Orleans. Despite this, he was given another chance to pitch in the majors in May and stayed up for good. The Fireballer dominated hitters, posting an absurd 49.2% strikeout rate. That's crazy. Walking just 5.9% of batters and allowing a slim 168 batting average against. His season was unfortunately cut short by an elbow injury in early August, and he ended up needing Tommy John surgery in March, which unfortunately rules him out for 2016 and a couple months in 2017 as well. AJ Ramos' hold on the closer job becomes more secure as a result. Okay. So let's just talk about Carter Capp. Now, I mean, this thing is sad, because he had elite numbers last year. It was just a fantastic season. And I'm sad about this whole Carter Capp's development. Let's move to our next player in the National League East. On the Mets, in Curtis Granderson, he was dealing with an eye injury right now. He went 2-for-3 with a run and a scrape for league debut today. So Granderson was had out of games due to a case of the ever-so-contagious pink eye. But he came out and said that his eye is okay after the solid performance. This is a very good development, as he should now slot back into the leadoff role for the Mets going forward. So, honestly, some were ready to write Granderson off after another sub-230 campaign in 2014, a year in which he slugged a career-low 388 in 654 plate appearances. But he rebounded in a big way at the age of 34. His strikeout and walk rates, obviously, they were much changed, but they were right in line with his marks from last year. His walk rate ranked 6th in the NL, but Granderson laid off far more pitches out of the strike zone, with his strike rate falling to 20% after hovering near 30% the previous three seasons. The more disciplined approach to pitches outside of the zone allowed Granderson to make contact at a career-high clip, and a lot of it was hard contact. He maintained his ball atop the order for the entire year, falling 2 inches shy of 100 and finishing just outside the top 20 among outfielders. The skills have been eroding over the past few years, but his adjustments in 2015 have Granderson being a new life as an asset for the New York Mets, not just a liability. So, this is really interesting for me. I like Curtis Granderson ever since he came over from the Yankees. I think it was a good pickup. But we'll see, obviously, what we get out of him, because it depends, really. Because for Curtis Granderson, you see the at-bats he gets, you see the average. The average is low, so I think it's going to be around 245, 250. It's not horrible, but again, that's pretty weak, pretty poor. I mean, it's weak compared to the whole of Major League Baseball. It's poor when you compare it to outfielders, but he can hit the home run. Great when you compare it to outfielders. Good amount of RBIs I think he'll get, and I just think it's going to be a quality season for Curtis Granderson. I mean, there's no doubt about that in my mind. So we'll see what we get out of him. It might not be the best for the Mets, but man, bet on Curtis Granderson. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be moving to a quick American Central. We're all talking about the Tigers and Justin Upton. That's next. We've been talking about the National League East and the American League East so far, but in the National League East, we're talking about the sad development of Aaron Altherr with his wrist injury. That'll keep him out until August or September. David Hernandez, how he's dealing with his triceps issue. Another sad development. Carter Capps going in for Tommy John surgery. And then Curtis Granderson doing well with his debut. So now it's time to move to the American League Central. And it's a relatively short American League Central that we have to talk about, because not much happened, really. The only thing that happened notable is that Justin Upton leaves today's games due to a left ankle injury. And it appears that Anthony Gose stepped on Upton's ankle when the two crossed paths pursuing the ball in the outfield. The good news is Upton was able to slowly walk off the field, and the Tigers have stated he was taken out for precautionary reasons. So that's pretty good news there. So Upton went to his first All-Star game in 4 years, as they moved to San Diego, hardly put a damper in his production. He hit 26 home runs, posted his third straight 25-homer season, and came just one steal away from his third career 2020 season. Also reached 150 strikeouts for the third straight year, and his .251 batting average was a career low. Upton's best season remains his 2011 campaign, when he hit a blistering .289 average and matched 31 home runs for the Diamondbacks. Between San Diego and Atlanta, Upton played in two of the most difficult parks for right-handed pull power hitters. He stuck in another pitcher's park long-term after signing a six-year deal with Detroit in the offseason. But the talent around him is significantly better than it was at his last few starts. So the run and RBI totals, they could honestly really tick up, which is exciting for Justin Upton fans and Tigers fans alike. So let's just talk about what we can expect out of Justin Upton this year. So I think he's going to get about 555 or so at-bats. Above average for anybody in the major leagues, but that's high if you look at outfielders as a whole. I think he's going to bat around 270. Not too bad. It's about average when you compare it to other major leaguers. But when you compare it to other outfielders, that's actually pretty good. I think it's going to hit around 35 home runs. Now, his home run numbers. In elite season, I've just up to this year. And if you're a Tigers fan, expect good things out of this young man, because I'm excited to see what the Tigers, and now that Justin Upton has a good home, what he will do with them. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB and come back. We are actually going to be talking about a longer division, and that has to do with the National Central, talking about the Reds, Cardinals, and Pirates next. Tigers after signing his long-term six-year deal. And now it's time to move to the National Central, and more specifically the Reds, where we talk about Michael Lorenzen and how he is dealing with some elbow tightness right now. And he calls it some tenderness, and he will get a couple of days off. So an ultrasound examination revealed no serious injury for Lorenzen, but any type of elbow discomfort is always a bit concerning. Look for stats to be updated in the coming days, and hopefully a few days off will be all it takes to get him back on the mound. So, most pitching prospects need to spend significant chunks of time at each minor league stop on the prospect ladder in order to be fully ready to contribute at the big league level. This is especially important if the prospect in question isn't that polished to begin with. But Michael Lorenzen, as you can bet, it's an outlier. I mean, all this applies to him, who was thrown into the Reds rotation late April, but it appears to have not been ready for the task. Lorenzen played the outfield and pitched relief in college before the Reds converted him to start him. While Lorenzen had a 1.88 ERA and 6 AAA starts, his strikeout ratio was a microscopic 4 strikeouts per nine, a harbinger for striking goals against major league hitters. Lorenzen could benefit from spending a half season in Louisville in 2016, but it's uncertain whether he'll get, given the lack of veteran starting pitchers in the organization. So, let's talk about what we can expect of Michael Lorenzen in 2016. I think we're going to get about 85 innings out of him, which is extremely low for starting pitcher. I think we're going to see about a 4.65 ERA. Again, that's poor if you know anything about starting pitching. We're going to, I can expect about a 1.55 whip. That's terrible. About 60 strikeouts, again, terrible. Wins, maybe 5, that's also terrible. So, I'm trying to be an optimistic guy, but honestly, Michael Lorenzen, if you look at this from a subjective point of view, you see that it's going to be a terrible season for Michael Larson because he's already been put into a bad situation. He's not a polished prospect, and the Reds need to understand that. They need to put him in Louisville for half of 2016. But the fact that they don't have the veterans and they didn't sign the veterans is not good news for this young man. The Reds could be wasting him. I'd be careful if I were them. Let's move to the Cardinals and how Yadier Molina, he caught today, but he did not hit. He saw action behind the plate. He's dealing with a wrist injury, and this was all in today's spring game. So Molina, he's yet to take swings, but he has recovered to the point where he can now see, albeit limited, live action. He figures to resume hitting shortly, and it is looking promising that he'll be ready to go by opening day. So while Molina posted 450-plus at-bats for the sixth time in seven seasons, he also saw his numbers dip for the second consecutive year. Molina hit for a 270 average in 2015 across 480 at-bats with a 310 OBP mark behind his being his lowest in 9 years. And the average of slugging haven't been that low since 2010. Thanks to his sort of intangibles like calling games, defense, and early winners, he'll likely be a safe bet for fans. But they shouldn't be expecting too much in those at-bats. It's not out of the question that you could have a huge bounce back season and post something close to the 313 average he posted from 2011 to 2013. But it's far more likely we see a much smaller one. And we should be prepared for the possibility that his numbers dip even lower in 2016. So don't be scared if that's the case if you're a Cardinals fan. And I think he's going to get about 400 at-bats this year. Now, if you compare that to the major leagues, it's low. And it's sort of surprising because you compare that to the rest of the major leagues, you get something that's low. And if you compare it to catchers, that's actually above average. You see, I think it's going about 270 average. Again, compared to the overall, and that's average. Compare it to the big leagues, and that's great for catchers. So we'll see what Yadier Molina posts in 2016. Let's move to a former Cardinal, Justin Masterson, and his shoulder injury, and how he plans on throwing at a showcase in March. So this veteran right-hander, he's bounced around several different organizations since his All-Star season with the Indians in 2013. It was most recently with the Red Sox offseason before being released in August. He is attempting to make a comeback after undergoing shoulder surgery in September. And according to Cotillo, Masterson will have plenty of interested parties at his showcase. Still, even if he lands a deal with a major league club, there isn't a particularly high ceiling for a 31-year-old pitcher that's coming off multiple shortened seasons. So, Masterson went full circle, I think. 2008 and 2009, he spent half of 2009 with the Red Sox when he was 24 years old, all of 2008 with the Red Sox when he was 23, then came back to them when he was 30. The in-between seasons there were with Cleveland. Perhaps 2009 to half of 2014. So you get a 4-year in 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2013. The Indians got 5 full years at Justin Masterson. Pretty good. 2014, he was traded to the St. Louis Cardinals and then signed with the Boston Red Sox. So that's what we see right now out of Justin Masterson. Do I expect that he's going to do well in the showcase? I don't really know what to expect out of Justin Masterson in the showcase. So it's sort of an unknown. He may have the interested parties. I mean, teams might want to go out and get Justin Masterson. Again, he's only 3 years removed from his All-Star season. He was great with the Indians in 2013. 2013, he pitched 193 innings, won 14-10, had a 3.45 ERA. That's some great stuff. I mean, if you compare it to the big leagues, you get a good season. But last year, it was really terrible. I mean, just god awful. It might have been because of their shoulder bump, because for pitchers, you use your shoulder. I mean, there's no denying that. And the fact that he had their shoulder injury might have accounted for the almost having a 6 ERA, even though he had the 6 ERA and the 1.6 whip. Again, that's awful. And if you look at Justin Masterson, this is actually surprising me. That's where he was born. Kingston, Jamaica. I did not expect that of a guy named Justin Masterson. I'm not trying to be racist here or anything, but he's awfully Caucasian, too. Quite strange, if you ask me. And it's just sort of a funny tidbit. You know, you're listening to the show, you're almost 45 minutes in, and you just want to hear Justin Masterson being born in Kingston, Jamaica. Just go look him up. I'll put it on the website tonight, too. Justin Masterson, he's not a Jamaican. I mean, 1985, March 22nd. I get it. He was born in Kingston, Jamaica. But this 6'6", 260-pound mammoth of a man does not look like he was born in Kingston, Jamaica. It just doesn't. I'm trying to be brutally honest here. Let's move to the Pirates and how Gerrit Cole, with his rib injury, is scheduled to make his spring debut Sunday in third 2 innings. So this is good news for Gerrit Cole, and he had a successful bullpen session on Monday. So it appears that the Pirates are confident enough in where he's at physically that they can schedule him to appear. Assuming all goes well in the next coming days, Cole will slot back into his role as the ace of the Pittsburgh rotation. And Cole appeared en route to an elite season last year in 2015, before a second half slowdown put a small damper on things. He went 13-3 with a 2.3 ERA and 1.12 whip leading up to the All-Star game, only to go 6-5 with a 2.98 ERA the rest of the way. For whatever reason, the 25-year-old posted much better numbers during the first half, which that's a bit weird. And also, he pitched a lot better numbers during day games than at night, which is sort of strange because baseball is really played at night. So he increased his slider usage from 12.1% to 21.2%, which enhanced his effectiveness. But keep in mind that pitchers who rely heavily on sliders tend to get hurt more frequently than those who don't. Aside from the increased slider reliance, there's no reason why Cole can't put together another outstanding campaign on 2016. So that's a bit strange out of Cole. And honestly, if you're a pitcher Pirates fan, which I am, Cole could get injured this year. He already has this rib injury, which just has to do with his arm. Again, ribcage injury, another weird spring training thing that has happened. The fact that he increased his slider from 12.1% usage in the first half of the season to 21.8%, that's got to be alarming if you're a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, because he might not be as durable as you want. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we are going to be moving to the West, to the Lost Division. Well, not Lost Division, but to the American League West, where there's only one team we're going to be talking about. And that's Sonny Gray and what we can expect from this season, as he was just in the A's opening day starter. That's next. Okay, so we have been talking about the National Central with the Reds and Michael Lorenzen, and now he's dealing with his elbow tightness. And I think it's going to be a good idea for the Reds to keep him in the minors for half the season. Talking about the Cardinals, Yadier Molina back in action, catching but not hitting. Justin Masterson, former Cardinal, having a showcase this month. And Gerrit Cole, albeit having his rib injury, scheduled to make a spring debut Sunday. So that's that. But we only have one player in the American League West. The American League sort of having a dull spring training. But one thing that happened is Sonny Gray was named as the A's opening day starter today. And manager Bob Melvin confirmed that today, that Gray will be taking the hill on opening day for the third consecutive season when the A's begin their campaign 2016 against the White Sox. Gray is not allowed to run in his other two opening day starts. A little bit of a fun fact there. So Gray followed up his first successful full MLB season in 2014 with a 2.73 ERA and 14 wins over 31 starts in 2015. Gray was one of the Cy Young favorites in September, but a few late season blowups pushes ERA up more than a half point in the last month of the season. Gray did not rediscover strikeouts from his initial big league debut, but he did manage to cut his walks down from 3 walks per 9 in 2014 to 2.6 in 2015. Gray supplements his average strikeout rates by limiting line drives with his 16.6% line drive rate, good for 4th best among all qualified starters in 2015. Gray now has 2.5 fantastic seasons. And while he will not get you the elite strikeouts of some of the top aces, he gets to pitch half his games in a spacious pitcher's park. It is possible that his struggles in September could push his ADP back a little bit, as people may forget how great he was for the first 5 months. So let's just talk about what we're going to be expecting out of Sonny Gray in 2016. I think he's going to pitch about 215 innings, which is pretty high for starting pitchers. Have about a 2.9 ERA, which is great for a starting pitcher. 1.15 whip, again, great. I think he's going to have 175 strikeouts, which is pretty good. I think about 15 wins, which is good. So we can expect a good to great season out of Sonny Gray this year. And if you're an Athletics fan, this is good news for you. All right, last break of the show. We are going to be taking a quick one. Welcome back. We have a busy National League West, where we have 3 teams, the Giants, Dodgers, and Diamondbacks to get to next. Talking about the American League West and Sonny Gray being named the opening day starter for the third straight year, and how he's done pretty good in those opening day starts, which is not surprising, but a pretty cool fact. Now we have to move to the National League West and the Giants, and how Mack Williamson is off to a hot start this spring. He's batting 417 with 2 homers and 3 RBIs. He's gone 5-for-12. That's how you get the 417 batting average. Now, Williamson right now, he's currently fighting for one of the last couple remaining spots on the opening day roster. In all likelihood, the Giants will want to start him in AAA this year so that he can get a ready stream of plate appearances. But if Williamson can keep up this pace, then they may be forced to roster him as the team's fifth outfielder and power bat off the bench. So Williamson returned from successful Tommy John surgery in 2015. Yes, hitters too can tear their UCLs. It's not just a pitcher thing, in case you're wondering. And he performed well at AA Richmond and AAA Sacramento before getting his first taste of Major League action in September. He didn't fare well with the Big League club, batting 219 and 34 plate appearances. While the results were poor for the 25-year-old outfielder, it wasn't that long ago when he had a 25-homer, 10-steal season with high A San Jose. So there's hope that he can restore his status as one of the Giants' top offensive prospects. He will almost assuredly start the year in the minors. I don't know why I started that song. Anyway, he'll probably start the season in the minors, and a fast start could earn him a call-up later in the season. Again, if he's on this pace, though, I don't think he's going to start the season in the minors. So let's talk about what we can expect out of him in 2016. So, again, he's a top prospect, and he is fighting, just fighting for that roster spot. But if I'm Mack Williamson, what I got to say, would I rather be a fifth outfielder and come off the bench, be a power bat late in games, or would I rather start my 25-year-old season at AAA Sacramento, get a steady stream of at-bats, and get ready for 2016? Because I know, if I'm Mack Williamson, that I did not do well in 34 appearances, 34 at-bats, bad 219. It's not good. Obviously, it's not going to be 417 for all spring, and obviously, it's not going to be 417 for the Major League year. If you want to have a bright spot for the Giants so far, this kid, Mack Williamson, is definitely one of them. And the Denard Span signing also does help him. One thing that could help him is Hunter Pence's health. If Hunter Pence is injured, or let's say Polanco or Pagan, or they get injured like they usually tend to do, Mack Williamson could slot right into there. And again, it might be a good idea to start him in AAA too because of the whole free agency thing and how they're going to get an extra club control. I don't know, the Giants have the money to afford to re-sign him if they want to, but it just might be a thing that they want to do because the Cubs, they had the money to re-sign Chris Bryant if they wanted to a year earlier, but they didn't. They did what most clubs tend to do and keep them in until about May, then bring them up, and they tend to do well because they get the steady stream of at-bats in AAA to start the year, come up after a dominant AAA, confidence sky high, get into the bigs, and they just rake like Chris Bryant did last year. And I don't think Mack Williamson is going to be a Chris Bryant. The third-round draftee out of Wake Forest could surprise people. I was talking about how Kyle Blanks has blasted his second home run of the spring already. But one thing to watch out is he does have an Achilles injury. This happened against the White Sox on Monday. So right now, Blanks is recovering from surgery on both of his Achilles tendons this offseason. His strong start in spring training is a good sign for his health and for his chances to stick with the Giants this season. Blanks was signed to a minor league contract in November. So the Giants weren't expecting him to be on the 25-man roster. If he can continue to flash his power, then Blanks may force San Francisco's hand, especially considering their need for right-handed power off the bench. So really, Blanks has had trouble staying on the field for a second straight season, logging just 71 at-bats due to continuing issues with his Achilles tendons. He's effective against left-handed pitching, continuing a career-long trend. And this is presumably why the Giants inked him to a minor league deal during the offseason. September surgery on both Achilles tendons clouds his future for the beginning on 2016, though he stands an outside chance of eventually working into a short and platoon role at first base alongside Brandon Belt. So, Kyle Blanks, he's 29 years old. He played with the Rangers in his career, played with the San Diego Padres most of his career. Since 2009 to 2014, he played with them. 2014, he was traded midway through the season to the Athletics, then signed with the Rangers in 2015. He is a power hitter, we'll say that. He is huge. 6 feet, 6 inches, 265 pounds. This kid out of the unknown Yavapai Junior College, drafted in the 42nd round. I mean, if I was the 42nd draft pick out of Yavapai Junior College in Arizona, I would be proud of right now, and you got to be proud if you're Kyle Blanks and maybe he'll platoon with Brandon Belt. All right, let's talk about our next guy, Christian Arroyo. He went yard in Tuesday's spring training win over the Reds, finishing with two hits, two runs scored, and two RBIs. So Arroyo, he's coming up his best minor league season since being drafted in the first round of the 2013 MLB draft. He hit for a 304 average with 9 home runs, 42 RBIs, and 5 steals, and 409 plate appearances for High A San Jose. While he won't make the major league roster come April, a strong spring could propel him to either Double A Richmond or Triple A Sacramento. A natural middle infielder projects to develop an offensive game similar to current Giants second baseman Joe Panik, heading for average with gap power and light speed. He got into Tuesday's game as a third baseman and could be used at the hot corner when he eventually does make it to the majors. Arroyo is considered the Giants' top positional prospect and currently makes number 62 in Baseball America's top 100 list. So the 2013 first rounder, again, he had his best season in the minors this past year, heading for a 304 average and 409 plate appearances with High A San Jose. Arroyo, who was drafted out of high school, continues to steadily improve, adding power while maintaining a strikeout rate under 18%. He should make the jump to Double-A Richmond or even Triple-A Sacramento in 2016. With the Giants being set at shortstop and second base on the major league level, it may be tempting to downgrade Arroyo out of the fear that he'll be blocked when he is ready. But he is still too far for dynasty of the Giants to think like that. He lacks the superstar offensive ceiling of some of the more highly talented minor league shortstops, but there is value in a player with Arroyo's relatively high floor. So this kid, Christian Arroyo, he is really blocked right now. 20 years old, so he's still young. He could develop, and he could be better than Brandon Crawford. He could be better than Joe Panik. I mean, it's... And there's also Kelly Thomason. So Christian Arroyo is really going to have to play well. Let's move to the Dodgers now and how Hyun-Jin Ryu feels good after playing catch on Monday. And he will play catch again. He did play catch again yesterday, and he is rehabbing shoulder injuries so far. And honestly, if you have one thing to say about Hyun-Jin Ryu, so far, so good. There is still no timetable for you to throw a bullpen session, though, which might be concerning. And Ryu, he was checked out in March after experiencing soreness in his left shoulder. He was originally expected to return in May, but the discomfort lingered. And Ryu ultimately underwent surgery to repair his labrum. Again, labrum repairs, they can be tricky. But Ryu started a throwing program in October, and the organization expects optimism that he would return to his prior form. That form has yielded a career 3.17 ERA and 56 starts, and solid peripherals, 7.7 strikeouts per nine and 2 walks per nine. Ryu relies on a 90 to 92 mile per hour fastball, slider, and excellent changeup. The shoulder issue has lingered in the camp, and he's expected to be out until at least mid-May. The Dodgers hope he can be their number 4, or at worst, number 5 starter in 2016 when he returns. But counting on him to return in May is a big gamble, considering how things unfolded last season. So let's talk about what we can expect out of Hyun-Jin Ryu in 2016. I think coming off this shoulder injury, he's probably going to pitch around 85 innings, which is low for starting pitchers. I can expect around a 3.7 ERA, that's pretty good. A 1.3 whip, though, which is weak, to be honest. Around 65, 70 strikeouts, terrible. And 5 wins, terrible. So, I'm struggling with what to expect out of Hyun-Jin Ryu. I think he's going to have a good ERA, but ERA is not everything. If you pitch 85 innings and have 65 strikeouts, 5 wins. And also allow all those hits and... I expect a terrible season out of Hyun-Jin Ryu this year. Let's move to our final player of the day, and we are running out of time on Inside MLB. So without further ado, let's talk about how Yasmani Tomas and his knee injury. He will not be in the lineup for Thursday's game against the Angels. So Tomas sat out today's game with a knee injury, and he will not be in the lineup yet again tomorrow, despite the expectation earlier in the week that the Cuban slugger would draw back into the order against the Angels. Furthermore, Tomas is not listed among the right-handed batters available off the bench for Thursday's lineup, meaning that he'll sit at least one more game. Tomas should be considered day-to-day heading into the weekend until a more concrete update on his status becomes available. So the Diamondbacks, they really made a splash prior to the 2015 season, signing the 24-year-old Tomas out of Cuba for 6 years and $68 million. Surprisingly, he started the season at AAA Reno after losing the starting job as spring trainer Jake Lamb. Tomas wasn't in the minor slot, however, as he joined the Diamondbacks on April 15th, playing for an injured Lamb at third and later as part of an outfield rotation. Tomas posted decent numbers at first, but later unraveled. It's expected that Tomas will display more power as he matures, so more run production should come. Ender Inciarte has moved to Atlanta in the offseason, creating an opening for Tomas, as the Diamondbacks seem intent to collect some return on the investment. Look for him to open the year as a primary option in left field. Let's talk about what we can expect at Giovanni Tomas in 2016. I think around 435 at-bats is realistic, which is pretty low in the leagues. But if you go to the ratings as a whole in the outfield, it's below average, but it's not low. I think it's going to have about 270 average, which is about average for a normal player. But it's pretty good for outfielders. I think it's going to hit about 15, 20 home runs. That's average, again, for most players. So we'll see what we get at Giovanni Tomas in 2016. I think you can expect a good season out of him. Wow, just time five. The Pirates lost again today. 2-6 now. They're on a 4-game skid. They haven't won since they beat Atlanta this weekend 9-6 in Orlando. They need to pick it up. But I have to make a confession. I wasn't really paying attention to baseball during school today. I was paying attention to basketball. I'm sorry if you're offended by that, but, you know, it's March Madness time. And I got to check those scores. I got to see if Pitt's beating up on Syracuse. Which, yep, they did win, 72-71. I know I'm not supposed to talk about basketball and inside MLB, but let's beat Carolina tomorrow. Let's win for the third straight year against North Carolina. Let's sweep North Carolina, too. Let's beat both of them this year. We're going to win the ACC tournament, aren't we, right? All those people think Virginia's going to win it. All those people think Carolina's going to beat us tomorrow, but no. Pitt's going to win tomorrow. They're going to beat North Carolina. They're going to beat... Get all those no-sayers, naysayers out of there. All the haters, leave. Because North Carolina had double bye. You know what double byes mean. They mean that you haven't played in a while. Pitt is coming off a confidence win over Syracuse. Third straight win this year against Syracuse. Fifth straight win overall against Cuse. That's amazing. But they're going to go in to D.C. tomorrow. I'm happy to talk to North Carolina. Because if it was in North Carolina, ooh, would those fans come out. But guess what? There'll be Pitt fans there tomorrow, and they are going to beat UNC at noon at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. to move to the semifinals against the winner of Duke and Notre Dame. So that's that with the basketball report on an MLB show. I don't know why I'm doing it, but I like my Pitt basketball, and that's for sure. I also love Pirate baseball, and the Pirates really need to get a win tomorrow. They just do. I'm not going to be paying attention to that. I'm going to be paying attention to Pitt, North Carolina. You should pay attention to it, too. And also, the Duquesne plays LaSalle tonight in about half an hour. So you might want to pay attention to that. Should be a pretty good game. We'll see how they do in their tournament. Let me see the bracket. If they win, they will play Davidson. So we'll see how they do there. I will see you Friday, 7:30 to 8:30. Wait, let me check. It depends. If Pitt beats North Carolina, I will see you early on Friday. If not, I'll see you late. Check out the website, lbinside.com. My name is Benson Spector. Have a wonderful Wednesday night.